First Peter chapter 3, we want to look at verses 1 through 12, and let's just remind ourselves real quick, what is the overall book about? What's kind of a central theme that runs through it? Why is Peter writing this? How to deal with suffering, handling suffering, facing suffering in trials in life. And it's interesting that he mentions the role of wives and husbands in the midst of that, right? Okay, yeah. Some have a view of marriage can be, is a curse. Marriage can be a curse. It can be a curse from the perspective of if you have an ungodly or two ungodly mates, it can be a very serious trial in life. When both are committed to God, it's a blessing. Not saying it's perfect, that there's no difficulties or troubles, but it is indeed a blessing. So we want to look at this in light of what Peter is writing about and understanding how it is that it applies to the brethren to whom he wrote, and then, of course, to ourselves. So let's begin 1 Peter 3, 1 through 6. Who will read these for us? 1 Peter 3, 1 through 6. Brian. All right. So wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands. He's saying this in light of what? What did he already mention earlier in chapter 2? Two things in particular. Submissive to government. Be subject to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. And to? Okay, yeah, in a business relationship, as we would think of it, be, you know, submit to your masters. So going down through here, remember, backing up to chapter 2, verse 9, he says, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they observe this conduct that you have, that they'll glorify God in the day of visitation. In other words, you live in a way that helps draw them to the Lord instead of repels them away. And then he gets into specifics in chapter 2, now bleeding over into chapter 3. So you need to have the right conduct as a citizen of a nation, respecting the law, the government that is there in place. You need to have the right relationship when it comes to work, labor, being submissive to your master. So you conduct yourself in a way that reflects well on God and helps to be an example to the master as well as to others, of course. And now he gets into the marriage relationship with the wife, being submissive to who? Her own husband. What might we point out? Own, which means?
Yours and not somebody else's.
Yeah, yours and not somebody else's. My wife is not subject to any other husband. She's subject to me. She is under my headship. And I am not the head of any other woman, the head of one woman, and that's it. So she is submissive, he says, to your own husband. Why is it that she is submissive?
In the verse here, it's to be a good, set a good example and possibly convert them if they're not believers.
Okay, possibly convert them. We'll dig a little more on that in just a little bit.
She was not the rule for herself, and her husband would rule over her. And kind of, that's where it's
Okay, I'm not going to say what Marla's saying because she's saying punishment. Eve being the... Did you use that word or did I mishear? Okay. Okay.
The one that was tempted and fell.
Okay, there is an order of authority, of headship, of leadership, which Paul in 1 Timothy chapter 2 ties back to the garden and Eve being deceived. Yes, I totally understand that. Here's what I want to get to. It's her decision. It's her attitude. And I'm not saying that she either could or could not, but she's the one who has to decide to submit. It's not the husband's job to make his wife submit. Does it say, husbands, make sure your wives submit to you? And so I'm going to stay on her. I'm going to tell her I'm your head, and you're going to do what I tell you to do because that's what you're supposed to do. Any wives ever have that? Did it work well? Any husbands ever try that? I've tried it. Well, I'm your head, and you're supposed to listen to me. Well, that just blows up in your face. It's her job to make sure she is submitting to her husband. So he puts it on the wife. Be submissive to your husband. The purpose, as Kevin pointed out a minute ago, is with the hope of saving his soul. Obviously, in the context, what he's talking about is these women in particular that he's addressing, their husbands are not believers. They're not committed to Christ. And so she has to be thinking about my relationship to my husband beyond the earthly tie relationship that she has, that he has a soul and I have an impact on that soul, and I need to live in a way that helps to draw him to the Lord. That because her husband wasn't a Christian, it did not remove the relationship of the head of the husband being the head of the wife. That relationship is still intact. It is still required in that marriage. So she is to show that reverence to him or that respect to him as being her head. So question number one I ask, how can someone be one without a word? Hey, I can't hear. My good ear is my left ear. And this little thingy is in that. Maybe I shouldn't wear this anymore. I don't know. But anyway, bad ears, right ear.
Actions.
Her actions.
I said, by the way they live their life.
Okay, by the way they live their life. Can someone be converted without the Word of God? How do we know that?
They
have to hear the Word. How do we know that? What does the verse say? Okay, the gospel's to be preached. Faith comes by hearing, hearing by the word of God. He's not going to be converted just because his wife is a good woman. That's, we want to understand, he's putting a relative thing in here. He's not saying you don't need to ever teach your husband. He never needs to hear. He'll just one day all of a sudden go, well, you know, Jesus is the Christ because she's been a submissive woman. So what is he really saying here?
She's not to be like the worldly women around her. She's to be a better guide than the women of the area where they live or whatever. And she's to be more sensitive to him as a teacher than they are. They present themselves as a matter of his work.
Right. We'll get to that. But how are you one without a word? What's the process? What's going on here? What's he saying is going to unfold and happen?
People know why you do what you do because when they'll observe the actions, but you also give explanations at times. If I'm going to church, you go every Sunday, every Sunday night, every Wednesday. Why do you do that? They see the behaviors that back up the verbal conversations, the studying that you do, everything. It's not all inclusive and just in your behaviors. It's a combination of both. And so I'm sure as a wife that they probably had conversations. Well, if you're not submissive to your husband and you're constantly fighting and arguing all the time, well, you said this, the, you know, you said Christ said this, but look at how you're this way.
So okay.
You have to have both working together.
A disconnect between what she says she believes and the way she's behaving and living. Eventually he has to want to hear. So back up and think about what's going on here. This woman's being converted to Christ, and she goes to her husband and she says, you need to be a Christian. You're living in sin. You're going to go to hell. You better get down into the water right now. Anyone ever experienced anyone, whether it's husband-wife relationship or whatnot, somebody obeys the gospel, and all of a sudden they're on fire. They're going to bring everyone to the Lord, and they're going to do it. I mean, they just lay the pressure on them. They really hammer down on them. And what do they end up doing sometimes? End up pushing. Can you see a husband? The wife comes to him, and she just starts lighting into him about how wrong he is, how bad he is. That could be a problem. And so he's saying, you conduct yourself in a way that's respectful, and through your behavior, as he sees that commitment that you have to Christ, his heart is softened and he's open and willing to listen over time. Because it could be very difficult. Think about coming out of a pagan society and you're coming here and telling me all this.
This process takes a long time. Here, we've had examples of a married couple living 30 or 40 years together, and finally, he comes around.
Right.
It's not something that's going to happen overnight.
Right.
That's one of the reasons that you should be very careful who you marry.
Yes, be very careful who you marry. I take it in this context, these people were married and she obeyed, and like Tom said, it could take decades for a husband to finally come around and to listen to the gospel. One of the things that she has to be careful about is she didn't become a Christian in rebellion toward her husband. Well, you're doing this, and I'm not happy with you, so I'm going to choose a different religion. Again, think about it in first century pagan society, that the religions or the gods that they would have would be traditional down through the family usually, and then the wife would usually adopt the husband's god and follow after that. And here she is in that context, in that society, and she's choosing in his mind a different god than mine. He sees that as an offense. And so Peter is admonishing, be very careful how you handle this, because you want to save his soul. That's your ultimate goal here. So be careful about that. And convey to him that you're doing this because you really are committed to Christ, not family heritage or rebellion or anything like that. Now, the New American Commentary made an interesting observation. In fact, a set of points that it laid out about this submission. She's not doing it to please her husband. She is not doing it to avoid conflict with her husband. Well, I'll just submit because if I don't, then we're going to argue and fight all the time. She's not doing it to manipulate her husband to try to get something out of him. She's not doing it to show everyone else how godly and righteous she is, how humble and meek she is. But she's doing it because of her relationship to God. You think about verse 2. What does he say at the end of verse 2 there?
Fear.
Accompanied by fear. What's the fear directed toward? God. Exactly right. Her fear is directed toward God. That's the one she ultimately respects and is submitting to, in submitting to her husband, respecting that relationship that God has established. So her submission is connected to what in verse 2? He brings out something in the New King James, there's a word, in some of the other translations there's another word, but it means the same thing.
Conduct.
conduct? What kind of conduct? Chaste or pure conduct. He sees that in you, and that's going to have an impact on him, as Gerald was mentioning a while ago. She's not to be a flirt. That's not going to help to entice the husband to the Lord or draw the husband to the Lord. She's not to be striving to get the attention of other men, but she is to fear God, reverence Him, and reverence her husband in that relationship that they have. And so verses 3 and 4 tells her she needs to focus on the inward, not the outward. So question 2 is, what is the wife's greatest tool of influence with her husband? Her heart. Anybody have anything to add? How about that gentle and quiet spirit? That's going to have an influence with her husband. Not a nag. Not somebody falling around, fussing at him all the time, being loud and boisterous. But a gentle and quiet spirit. Not someone who's contentious and angry and bitter all the time. But someone who's tranquil and yielding and kind, being gracious toward her husband. Verse 3, what is he telling her not to do? And what does that not mean?
You're just not to focus yourself on the outside. You're supposed to focus on the inside. And it doesn't mean that wearing necklaces is wrong. It just means that can't be your focus.
So you won't go to hell for wearing a necklace. Okay, some have taken this to an extreme. Arranging the hair, wearing gold, putting on fine apparel. He's not telling women you dress in a potato sack and you don't fix your hair. You know, if you put a braid in it or whatever y'all put in your hair, I don't even. Whatever you do to fix up, he's not saying you don't do that. You can't do that, that you're wrong for doing that. He's pointing out, though, that is not to be the thing that you use to draw attention, to command respect, to build the relationship on. The way that you dress, the way that you look. That's not the emphasis. Gerald.
Well, you're talking about the feet sack, or the finger sack, whatever. They, as impurities, there is thousands of women that make dresses out of feet sacks.
Because of the hard times?
But towards the hard times and the way that the speech sites come out in prints. They had different patterns.
Sure. And, you know, people can wear whatever they want to wear as long as it's modest. Okay, if it's a feed sack or whatever. Brenda.
Also, she's to dress not to entice other men.
Right. She shouldn't be dressing in a way to purposely entice or draw the attention of other men, stir them up. Exactly right. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. 2 Corinthians 4, where Paul, in a different context, mentions something, I think, at least enlightening on what Peter's talking about. You know, do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit. So, 2 Corinthians 4, 16 to 18. Who will read that for us? Kevin, go ahead.
Therefore, we do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal way of glory. But we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal.
Okay, somebody make the connection for me. What's that?
What we base a lot of what we see physically. As good or pure or whatever, but that part's dying every day. It's deteriorating, it's not what I was 30 years ago, whatever. But it's the inward heart that grows and it matures and it becomes more spiritually minded. And it's when it doesn't die, it's nurtured right, and it's the beautiful part of the person.
Okay, that outward part is fading and decaying, right? I mean, the clothing itself fades, decays, it rots over time, it wears out, things like that. The body wears down over time. I don't care who you are, how much time you spend on your body, it's going to break down over time. It's just not what it was at one time. So if you base your influence on the outward, what's going to happen with that influence? It will deteriorate, exactly right. But if you base your influence on the inward that is growing day by day, in spite of the outward decay, the inward part's being renewed, it's being strengthened, it's getting stronger, it's getting more beautiful over time, what happens with your influence? Get stronger over time, right? So that's what he's pointing out to her. Make sure that your center of influence is that inner person that's going to last over time. And so you'll be able to hopefully influence your husband to come to the Lord. The godly spirit he mentions very particularly here is very precious in the sight of God, very valued by God. So who does he give as examples of this?
Sarah.
Okay, he gives Sarah. Who does he mention right before that? It's a group.
Holy women.
Okay, holy women. What did these holy women do? Trusted in God. So the woman who is submissive to her husband is what kind of woman? Not trick here. One who trusts in God. The woman who doesn't submit to her husband, what kind of woman is she? She doesn't trust God. Right? She doesn't trust him. She feels like she needs to take control of the situation. Well, I'm not going to submit. I need to do this. I need to do that. I need to exert my will over his. Women who trust in God are going to submit to their husband. Not always easy, is it, ladies? All right, anybody here have a perfect husband? Any woman have a perfect husband? No. You're submitting to an imperfect human being who makes mistakes, who's sometimes just stupid, right? I'll admit it. I'm stupid at times. I make mistakes. I do dumb things. I do mean things. But the Lord still says, you know what? You're to submit to your husband. Delora?
Wives and husbands both should treat each other in a way that they can trust each other.
Yes. Yes.
You can dress becoming. It's not saying you can dress nice and neatly. It's just saying God's first.
God's first. Yeah, show respect to the husband. So, holy women of old who trusted in God, this is the way they conducted themselves. And he gives the specific example of Sarah. And what does he say that Sarah did?
Obeyed Abraham.
So what's the parallel between verse 5 and verse 6? Okay, you trust in God. They were submissive to their own husbands as Sarah obeyed. That word is an anathema in our society. You mean the woman must obey the man? Yes. Yes, that's exactly what the Word of God teaches. 1 Peter 3, Titus chapter 2, obedience to the husband. Our society gets very angry about that. It seeps into the thinking of the sisters at times. But that's exactly what the Bible teaches and requires. Okay, we're going to whittle on the men in a minute. But there's your example. How did she obey Abraham? Calling him Lord. Anybody dig into that, where that comes from? It only happened one occasion that we have record of in the Old Testament. It was when the angels came to visit Abraham, and they told him, you know, Sarah's going to have a child. And she laughed at that, and she said, will I please my Lord? She was thinking it. She didn't even say it out loud. One of the things that I read is, it's an example of the extent to which she respected Abraham as her head. That it was a somewhat casual occasion, and it was just in her thoughts, even in her thoughts. You know, will I please my Lord when I am old? So it's saying that it was ingrained in her. It was a part of her character, just the way that she thought, calling Abraham Lord. And so that's the standard that is held up for the wives, and particularly in this context, the wife who's married to someone who is not a Christian, so that she will have the hope of wielding influence with him to bring him to the Lord. And she's not to be afraid with any terror, it says. Again, what's the idea there?
Fearing God.
Absolutely, fearing God. Fearing God, and she's not to be concerned as much with losing her husband or his cold treatment, that if she's submissive to him, that it's going to give him undue power, turn him off in some way for whatever reason it might be, but that's going to help her and bring him closer to her, to bring him to the Lord. Any other thoughts?
And this is an age-long process. I mean, he goes all the way back to Sarah and Abraham. It's not just
it wasn't a cultural requirement. Abraham being really in a different culture many centuries before. Yeah, this spans time. Exactly right. All right, husbands, verse 7. Who will read this for us? Hold on. Go ahead, Rick.
Likewise, husbands, live your wives in an understanding way. Show honor to the woman as a weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered.
Okay. What is the husband's duty to his wife, and how can he fulfill it? I ask you to give an example. So what does Peter say is his duty?
Dwell with them according to knowledge.
Dwell with them according to knowledge. What is that practically? What does that mean?
According to their needs.
According to their needs. So it would be having a knowledge of that woman, of understanding her. There are some who have said they believe this is maybe a reference to understanding of his duty, his responsibility to God, that he is to treat his wife in a certain way, and that could be the understanding of the wife. I don't have to understand all women. I'm not even going to attempt to understand all women. But I need to understand my wife, her nature, her needs, her fears, her anxieties, what pleases her, what's her dreams, her hopes, her wishes in life. That's something I'm supposed to do. So dwell with her with understanding, and doing what in this? Giving honor to the wife. How can I honor my wife?
Meeting those needs.
Hey, meeting those needs.
That's huge, because I mean, you see relationships where men just, they're in the home, but they're not there. They're leaving them. To have a companion, I mean, that's what marriage is about.
Some men see it purely, if I could use this term, as a mechanical thing. Look, I go to work, I bring money home, I put a roof over your head, be happy. That's it. But he's calling on men to do more, to be more here for their wives. Brian?
Provide not only physical needs, but their spiritual needs as well.
Exactly. Spiritual, and we might add another word in there. Emotional needs, right? Okay, women know that. Men, we don't get that sometimes. There's emotional needs of a woman, and we're bricks at times. Well, a lot of times, maybe. We're a little thick. We're a little slow. We don't quite understand all those workings of the nature of a woman, but he's saying you need to be learning your wife. You need to dwell with her with understanding. How can I honor my wife? What's another way? Somebody give me something.
Respect.
Okay. How about if I hold my wife as the apple of my eye, she gets my attention, she gets my affections, my desires are toward her and not toward any other woman. Will that honor my wife? That I'm not looking at other women and thinking about them? That's one way to honor your wife. Flip around what he just talked about with the wife. Hey, wife, you cover yourself up. You dress in a way that's appropriate. Your conduct is chaste. Flip it on the husband's side. Right? He needs to have his attention, his affection, his desires toward his wife, not toward others who are out there. So honor your wife. What does he include there? Do you have something else?
Communication.
Communication. Exactly. The wife needs to know about her husband, his thoughts, how his day went sometimes. It helps her to be at ease. Okay, everything's okay here. Life is all right. The women tend to be nesters, right? Like, they want the home, the family, to be okay. They don't like turbulence and things. Sometimes we men, we don't mind a little bit of turbulence. We're okay stepping out and taking a chance and just, let's just see how this turns out. Most women are not normally like that. Well, I don't want to see how it turns out. I want to know how it's going to turn out. I want to know everything's going to be okay. So communicating with her and helping her to be at ease definitely will help that. Not only in the material things, but the relationship. You know, I love you. I care about you. I've been thinking about you today. Those kinds of things. So spending time with her and listening to her. Women, do you want your husband to listen to you? Yeah. Listen to me. I've got things on my mind. I'm troubled about something. I just need to get it out.
Tell me. You know, if there's selfishness on anybody's side, this won't work. And the seriousness of it is that it says your prayers may be hindered.
Exactly.
I think sometimes we don't get that.
Okay, let's back up just a hair. Keep that in mind. Okay. Honor the wife as what?
The
weaker vessel.
Bearer of grace.
How is the weaker vessel traditionally looked at? What's been kind of the, okay, strength, right? The physical bodily strength. And it is true, men are generally stronger than women. That is true. But he has a little word here that precedes weaker vessel. In our language, it's two letters. As. What's he really talking about here?
Something that's precious.
Something that you hold as valuable. In fact, the honor there is the same as the idea of the precious back up earlier in verse 4. It's something that's, you treat her as something precious, something of value. So you honor her as the weaker vessel. All of us have things that we work to protect, to take care of. For men, sometimes it's a car, right? They wash, they wax it, they vacuum it, they clean it, they don't allow anybody eating in it, all those kinds of things if they have a special car or whatnot. It might be some other little trinket that they've got in life that they may even, you know, frame it in glass and hang it up on the wall because it's very valuable and precious and dear to them. Maybe a diploma, maybe it is some type of citation or award or medal or whatever it may be. They do all kinds of, maybe it's a baseball in a glass that's got some ink on it, you know, They put it in there because it's valuable to them. We put stuff in a safe, right? Because we think that's a valuable thing, a valuable object. Well, he's saying your wife is valuable. You need to work to protect her, to honor her, to put her in that place of respect, if you will. So that's the way that you treat her. Because men can be harsh. Can we be harsh, ladies? Can we be rough without realizing it? I know I can. Because sometimes my voice will get to where I think, okay, you can now hear me, and it's like, stop yelling. Okay, I need to take it down a couple notches. I'm not upset, I'm not angry, I'm just talking, right? So we have to be careful about those things.
Well, today, the world, more or less women, try to put themselves up.
We're working on the man now, so take this in the right direction for me.
The man is stronger than the woman, and the woman is weaker in strength than the man. So really, should be kind and gentle with the wives, are always gentle.
Yes, we need to be gentle with them in all aspects. Getting back to the honoring and tying it into what Delma had mentioned a moment ago, what he says here, heirs together of the grace of life. So how can we honor our wife in light of the fact that we're heirs together of the grace of life? She has a soul. Anything else to add to that, draw that out? Denise?
Speaking of when it says that, does that mean or heaven, eternal life, is that what that means? Or does it mean are they here as good as they can be?
It's looking toward that eternal home.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So, if I honor my wife and I see that we are heirs together, the grace of life, what kinds of things should I be doing?
Working together spiritually.
Work together spiritually.
I guess when I think of this, in studying history, it seems that man in history is elevated above a woman, but in actuality, in God's eyes, they're the same. And even though society may put you in different places, when it comes to your spiritual salvation, you're there together. You're on an equal playing field. You're both going to be judged by God. You both have the same standards. And so if you're, you know, as a married couple, you help each other reach that goal by, you know, what can I do to help build you spiritually? What can you do to help build me spiritually? How can we, you know, grow together? How can we help each other? Because you want that for them. And it's not that, well, she serves him by making sure everything's okay where he can grow only. They help each other to get there.
Okay. We help each other get there. As the head of my wife, one who honors her, how can I help her?
Initiating daily Bible readings together.
Daily Bible readings together. Read the Bible. Talk about the Bible. Discuss the Bible together.
Recognize her role in the home and be very supportive to it in accordance with God's directions.
Recognize her role in the home and support that according to God's will. So she's dealing with the children and something comes up, what do you do as a father? I'm with Mama. I am with Mama. That's who I'm with. She's running the house. I'm with her. Broccoli. You eat broccoli. Yeah, you don't get the chips. You get the broccoli. And that's the way it's going to be. So, yeah, you support that role. You have the Bible studies together. You go to church together. And you make sure the children are going to church and getting their lessons together, things like that. You be the spiritual leader in the home. Prayers with your wife, with the children. Taking time with the family to study the Word of God. It's exactly right. Those are the things, at least some of the things, we need to be doing. Can a husband vacuum and dust?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Talks about in Titus chapter 2 that the woman is the keeper of the home. Does that mean that the husband can't ever do anything in the home? Well, I'm done with my day of work. I'm going to sit back in my lazy boy and you just take care of everything else, honey. She's been wrestling with two or three kids all day long. And that's all she's been able to do.
I grew up in that with my dad. I mean, you know, my mom worked, my dad would come home, and we would, the three of us, take care of it, you know, and he did that for my mom. And to this day, he still does it. And, I mean, I have so much respect. I mean, a lot of things, but for that alone,
yep.
I will never forget that.
Exactly.
He did it for her. He didn't do it for himself. He did it for her.
Exactly. He did it for her. Dishes, cleaning, laundry, all those things that just are part of the daily grind of life. He can show his love and devotion to his wife in helping relieve that burden. Now, everybody finds, hopefully, they're both committed to God, they're committed to each other. There may be a balance there. There may be times when he steps in more than at other times. Whatever may happen, but he's mindful of that. He's thoughtful of that. And she will appreciate him for that consideration to cherish and nourish her, as Paul puts it over in Ephesians chapter 5, because they are heirs together of the grace of life. What does that mean to be heirs together of the grace of life?
You're both going to heaven if you get it right.
Yeah. You can help each other to get to heaven, and you can both end up in heaven if you do this right. You're committed to each other, you honor God, you help each other. So, what's the opposite of that?
You could cause somebody else, you could cause her or him to go to hell.
Okay, in particular in verse 7, what he's saying is, if you don't honor the wife as the weaker vessel, what's going to happen? You're going to hell. You're going to go to hell. You're going to lose your soul if you don't honor your wife as the weaker vessel. You don't treat her with the love and the respect that she deserves. You're going to lose your soul. Because if God's not going to hear your prayers here on earth, you're not going to heaven. Right? So he says you need to be thinking what this is, what this really means. So again, the wife, she's submissive to her husband. Not for the simply earthly benefits and relationships and all of that. All that comes into play, but she's submissive because of her relationship to God. And he honors his wife as a weaker vessel, not because of the benefits of here on earth and all that, because of his relationship to God. That's why we do what we do. So, all right. We've got like 6 minutes, so we'll cover what we can here real quick. Let's read verses 8 through 12, please. Who will grab that? 8 through 12. Go ahead, Marla.
Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another. Love as brothers, be tenderhearted, be courteous, not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you are called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. For He who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking guile. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and the ears are open to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil.
Okay. So, brethren, be of one mind. Be united together, having compassion for one another, tender-hearted, courteous. So why do we need to be tender-hearted and courteous or compassionate toward one another? Question number 4.
Because our brethren are not really express are not coming to me, but suitable for that sometimes. They are disagreeable at times.
Brethren are disagreeable at times?
Yes.
I never, yeah. First of all, it's kind of like all these types of things. Number one, it's commanded. Just everything else that's totally irrelevant in light of is commanded. But as Tom is pointing out, look, we're all saved by grace, right? And what is grace?
Undeserved,
unmerited favor, right? So we all have faults, we all have failings, and we need to appreciate that. Our spouse, if our spouse is a child of God, is our number one asset in this world to help us to get to heaven. What's the number two?
Brethren.
Okay, now brethren may be our children, may be our parents, may be things like that, right? That we're in the same congregation or we have that close relationship. But the point being, look, you have your spouse. If they're a Christian, they're number one. Then your brethren, as far as spiritually building you up, encouraging you, keeping you on the straight and narrow, is going to be those who are children of God. So we have each other here to help each other to get to heaven, and we need to keep that in mind. I'm here to help you as well as you are here to help me. Some Christians, for whatever reason, believe it's their job to make sure everyone else is obeying the commandments of God, dotting every I, crossing every T, according to what they perceive to be faithfulness to the Lord. And they go around, they get involved in everybody's business, and they harp and they criticize and they stay on someone or many people because they think that's their job to do it, right? Does that work? Is that good? Is that healthy? Be having compassion for one another. We struggle against sin. Love as brothers. Be tenderhearted. Be courteous toward one another. It's not saying that we don't need to correct each other at times, but you do it with a spirit of humility. You do it with their best interest at heart. You do it in a kind and gentle way. Gerald.
We're to have attitude toward each other as Christ says towards us.
Exactly. In Galatians 5, Paul warns the brethren there about biting and devouring one another. And you think of the context now in 1 Peter, that they're coming under persecution, there's going to be pressure on those relationships among the brethren. And he's saying, be careful now, be careful. You need to be compassionate toward each other, tenderhearted, courteous, and kind toward one another. And to be a blessing to them, instead of returning evil for evil, reviling for reviling, be a blessing to them. Don't be ugly and mean if they have a bad day or they say something out of hand. Don't turn around and do the same thing back to them. It's essential to inheriting a blessing is the way that we treat one another. So he then quotes from Psalm 34. Does anybody remember what Psalm 34 is about? Did anybody look this up? This was when David, now that the name of the king slips to mind, it was that Abimelech, he was before him, and he feigned madness to get away from him. David had been running from Saul. He went to seek refuge, but then he realized all of a sudden, oh, I may be in danger down here. And so he feigned madness, and he was driven away, you know, just go away now. So he was fearful for his life, fearful of what was going on. He was uncertain. And so it's in that context that he gives this, and Peter's saying, you know, these times of stress, these times of fear, these times of concern, be sure to have your focus where it needs to be. He who would love life and see good days. That you want to not only live a good life here, but really ultimately to see that eternal home with God. Then you need to make sure you maintain a godly orientation, a godly bearing in life. Turn away from evil, do good, seek peace and pursue it. When those stresses and those trials come to those relationships, seek peace. Go after that. Do what you can to make sure that the relationship is good, actively seeking to do God's will no matter what other people may do. That's tough at times. But he's saying that's what you need to be doing as children of God and working together to help each other to get to heaven. Any other thoughts there? Okay. Since they're not waiting, and I've got just a second, maybe the folks are in the back, but something I wanted to circle back to real quick. The relationship of husband and wife, the head being the head, Christ being our head, what does he do? Sacrifice. He serves. When a husband is serving his wife, she has a much, much easier time submitting. Even when she just does not agree, that relationship has taught her to trust that he's seeking to do what's best for her. Much easier.